Namo myoho renge kyo, namo myoho renge kyo, namo myoho renge kyo. Hi, hello friends. Thanks for being here. Thanks for your practice. I hope this finds you in good health and secure. We're starting a new chapter in the BDK translation of the Lotus Sutra. Apologize, I'm still settling my robes here. I'm on a little bit of a Leo Buscaglia, maybe, what do you call it? Oh my goodness, words. Still happening. A nostalgia for some of the things this man said. Not a Buddhist. Here's a couple more quotes. Don't spend your precious time asking, quote, why isn't the world a better place, end quote. It will only be wasted time. The question to ask is, how can I make it better? To that, there is an answer. The easiest thing to be in the world is you. The most difficult thing to be is what other people want you to be. Don't let them put you in that position. A life without love, no matter how many other things we have possessions. See, he's not a Buddhist. Oh, but no matter how many other things we experience, I would say, is an empty, interesting term, meaningless one. Okay, I'll stop there. Now you can see, if you're critical, that he's not speaking Buddha wisdom, yes? But he is speaking Buddha-informed wisdom. He has innate Buddhahood, or had. He's no longer living, I believe. Anyway. But his thematic of love, though it may have some aspects but of attachment, right? Just like we would think of love or desires or clinging or craving as aspects of love, they're not. They are not. And as Buddhists, certainly, we can raise our definition, our understanding, our knowing of love as something not of physicality, but of something much, much deeper and more profound. Now, if you've ever been in love, you know that there's a very strong physical aspect to it. You know that. But don't you also know that there's something undefinable that completely transcends that physicality? And that physicality becomes a way of expressing that internal, I don't understand, je ne sais quoi, right, of this attraction, this deep wanting, right? And we call it that, thirst, wanting, unquenchable. Of course, that's driven by the world of hunger, right? But in great measure, we are materialist creatures. We live in a physical world, right? So the prospect of Buddhist view, compassion, of this engagement with humanity, divorced, or in Buddhism, liberated from that mechanism, that built-in avarice for possessing, it's really, really difficult, as in Shakyamuni's words, difficult to understand, which makes it very difficult to believe. Why do I say all this? Well, let me say one more thing and then I'll explain. When I say to you that when you chant your Daimoku, the Daimoku, and I say to you, I want you to know without exception, without even knowing with just having the depth of confidence to expect that with each Daimoku, you are awakening your Buddha mind, your Gohonzon mind, eye of Buddha-ness, experience of Buddha, the Dharma. What I'm saying to you is I want you to know, in the sense that you know, that every breath you inhale is oxygenating your blood. Do you think about it? Do you think, here goes my lungs filling up so that it can push this oxygen, this one component of this gaseous air, into my blood to feed my organs and my flesh and tissue? And do you think about that? Now, I know some of you have practiced very deep meditation practices, and it may have taken you to that, following the meridians in your body, following the breath, qigong, right? Following the breath into your dantian, accumulating energy, right? Bioelectric energy, filling that battery and taking some of it and continuing up, right? Along the spine, through the organs, cleansing them of old cells, old particulates that are not healthy to hang on to, and aerifying them, gasifying them so that they can come up through your mind, through your valley, the pituitary, and out through your forehead, back into the cosmos, the whole cycle. We can get into it, but we're practicing Buddhism. I just want to pay respects to everybody's path. We all have different paths that bring us to this. But at some point, you simply breathe. And you don't really consider the whole mechanism of it so much as you just have a profound confidence that it's occurring. Ask somebody with COPD how shaken their confidence is about this very thing. Well, they'll tell you a book about it. This is the way I want you to know, quote unquote, that your Daimoku awakens your Buddha experience. Just know it. Not just for yourself, but in the context of this next chapter, yes, I'm finally getting to it. They named this chapter Ease of Practice. I don't know, it's a little bit of a betrayal. Let's say that this title, sorry, it's not a betrayal, but let's understand this title to be the goal of this chapter, because it is not a definition of ease of practice. It's a definition of how to get to an ease of practice, but this is probably the most direct teaching to you and I about the kind of effort we need to make in order to truly, quote unquote, know, have this depth of confidence. And I can tell you, I'm struggling with one of them right now. At 66 years of age, I'm really struggling with one thing. You know, some of you may know that I haven't been involved in any relationships for over 15 years. No claim, no medal desired here. Just it's come about as another level of my practice as a bodhisattva, as an attempt of practicing bodhisattva practices. I've over the last 40 years slowly moved away from my, what to call it, a relation, a craving, a cling to material things. They come my way and I enjoy them. And then it's not that I don't enjoy them anymore. I just don't seem to have any, what to call it, motivation to, I could sit down and fool around with it and it would give me joy, but I just don't seem to need that. I'm so involved in doing this. This satisfies everything for me except touch. That kind of flesh-to-flesh intimacy. And I know this may be embarrassing to some of you and probably should be embarrassing to me, but I'm telling you, I have nothing to hide from you folks. So our sangha, we're clear, we're honest, and I'm telling you, this is probably the most difficult samsaric aspect of my life I'm now finding, because it's the only thing that seems to gnaw at me, and it's made itself very obvious to me that I haven't let that go yet. Whether it's a letting go of or just a level of my practice that I haven't quite influenced moment to moment, that karmic aspect of my being still seems to desire satiation. And it's not even in my sphere. It's you know, the Buddhist gods influencing you, you know, that rhetoric. I really feel the presence of that, of my practice, not only making me aware that I must be in the changes, the changing of that profound karma. And it is profound, because Shakyamuni spoke about it and set up monasteries and separations and isolations almost day one, right? It's one of the most powerful drives we human beings have, man or woman, both of us, right? Because we're designed to mate. But Shakyamuni makes a big deal about this aspect because it's such a profound drive, yeah? So I'm not sure, 2,700 years ago, when he was teaching the Lotus Sutra, if he was still teaching with skillful means when he spoke this chapter, that maybe if he were here today, it would be somewhat modified, but I don't want to make that claim. All I want to do is entreat your attention to not get stuck on that as a, well, if he's going to ask that, then I quit. Don't do that. Just understand that he's teaching this audience of now, these, right, all these bodhisattvas have told him, we're doing it for you. We're going to carry this teaching into the future forever. Don't worry. Well, that's all brand new. That's just happened in this assembly that they are thinking in this way. And Buddha Shakyamuni, he's not stupid. So he's going to remind everyone, your practice has to be just flow without obstacle. If you're going to commit to this, you need to be like this. You need to be able to do these fundamental bodhisattva acts if you're going to be capable of doing what you say you're going to do. Ah, so now ease of practice isn't so much, okay, you guys made a commitment, let me make it easy for you. No. He's saying to them, you're going to have such a core knowing, experience, confidence in your bodhisattva coursing through the world with the Buddha-ness in your mind, way of being, that you'll be capable of doing what you just committed to. Oh, that's kind of a different suggestion of this title, right? So let's get into it and you'll see what I mean. Ease in practice, not ease of, ease in practice. Every little word, there's a reason. Thereupon the prince of the Dharma, Bodhisattva Mahasattva Manjushri, addressed the Buddha saying, O Bhagavat, these bodhisattvas are very rare. Yeah, they've just made quite a pronouncement. In respectful obedience to the Buddha, or Buddhaness, they have made this great vow that in the troubled world to come, we will preserve, recite, and teach this Lotus Sutra, this Myoho Rengekyo. O Bhagavat, how can these Bodhisattva Mahasattvas teach this sutra in the troubled world to come? Manjushri is asking the question himself. With what they know, those who need to know more and those who do not, in the words of the previous chapter, how in the hell are they going to pull this off? The Buddha addressed Manjushri, saying this. If the Bodhisattva Mahasattvas want to teach this sutra in the troubled world to come, they should abide in the four kinds of practices. The first is to establish the sphere of their Bodhisattva practice, right? Self and environment. So establish who you're going to, what you're going to affect, instruct, influence, right? What we talk about all the time. And the sphere of their relationships. And thereupon expound this sutra for the sake of sentient beings, all sentient beings. So make a plan. Envision yourself enlightening yourself, absolutely. And in that aim and that practice, extend your enlightenment, your experience of Buddha-ness into your environment, which is comprised of relationships and relationships that lead to an outward growth of relationships into the world, the cosmos, right? So he's getting very specific now. O Manjushri, what is the sphere of the practice of the Bodhisattva Mahasattva? If a Bodhisattva, you and I, Mahasattva, abides in the stage of perseverance, keep your practice strong, regular, stolid. Is gentle, tranquil, non-violent, and unafraid, which you might almost hear as a contradiction, but to be unafraid isn't a condition of outward aggression, right? To be unafraid is to be supremely confident. And furthermore, if he remains, and it keeps saying he, it keeps using the male voice, but ladies, understand this is said for you as well, okay? If he remains unmoved with regard to existent things and perceives them in their true aspects and neither acts nor discriminates, this is called the sphere of the practice of the Bodhisattva Mahasattva. So that's the starting point. And as I was saying before I started reading this chapter, my experience through practice has been that that happens on its own. It just takes a consistency, a confidence, a perseverance in practice. And you begin to notice, at some point you're going to notice, man, I should give those things away. I should sell that thing. When did I lose my desire to, I've lost my desire. That's interesting. What have I replaced it with? What am I doing? What hole did it fill that I no longer need filled? Wow, this is amazing. This is really happening. I'm a different person. Yes, because you're constantly awakening your Buddha-ness. And your Buddha-ness knows that all these baubles are just bubbles of baubles. That life, your every breath is putting oxygen into your blood, your life, your engine of life, which is the crux of life. The things aren't. It just happens. What is the sphere of the relationships of the Bodhisattva Mahasattva? He's going to explain all four stages here, or stages or practices, right? The Bodhisattva Mahasattva should not consort with kings, princes, ministers, and chief officials, politicians, people of power are driven by power. Being around those people, you either get manipulated or, worse, corrupted. So just don't put yourself in that situation. Right? Nichiren sure tried it. But when Nichiren tried it, he was not consorting. He was redressing. So be aware of the two, right? He should not consort with heretics, Brahmins, Jains, and others, or worldly writers, critics of poetry, materialists, or extreme materialists, right? They're everywhere. Don't consort with these people. Same problem. They won't hear you. They're consumed by their errors, their misconceptions, their politics, their agendas. They're shutting off whatever you have to offer. Don't waste your time. Remember Buscaglia? Don't waste your time. Nor should he become acquainted with pranksters, boxers, wrestlers, clowns, and various jugglers, nor with outcasts and people who raise boars, sheep, chicken, or dogs, nor with hunters, fishermen, and those with evil conduct. So that's a reference to the Noble Eightfold Path, right? That because our focus as Bodhisattvas has to be of a critical nature. Not because all these people are bad, but because their behavior pollutes their thinking. They are, in all of these descriptions, craving, clinging creatures of the physical realm, right? And to maintain our goal of Bodhisattva Mahasattvas, existing to promote, promulgate these teachings, we have to stay centered. A bodhisattva should teach such people the Dharma. So it doesn't say don't talk to them. It says don't get in relationships with them other than the relationship of teaching the Dharma, but only if they come to us. And then expect nothing. So in other words, plant a seed if they're curious, if they ask you. Remember in my videos on Shoju rather than Shakubuku? This is the age we live in. We need to radiate constantly our relationship with Buddha mind. And these people, as I've said already, they'll disappear from our lives. One way or another, they just will stop coming around or appearing. But if they do, kings on down to clowns and performers come into our environment, they will do so because they're attracted to something they see in us. They're attracted because something's activated in their mind that knows of their incompleteness. And when they come to us, We have one mission and one mission only. You ever heard Namu Myoho-Renge-Kyo? Say it with me. Namu Myoho-Renge-Kyo. What is that? It's the Buddhist chant for self-awakening. Oh, okay, cool. Well, I gotta go. Okay, bye. Have a nice day. That may be your only interaction with that person. It may go a very different way. They may go, wow, I've never heard that before. What does it mean? Well, if you'd like to chant with me for a few minutes so that you can experience it for 5 minutes, it'll make more sense. I'll talk to you about it. Oh, that sounds great. Maybe some other time. Okay, bye then. Right? Don't engage. Don't acquaint yourself with them. So what are you doing today? Where are you? No, that is not your life mission. Your life mission is to draw them into enlightenment, especially in this Mapo age. If you want to make a difference, if you believe in world peace, if you believe in Kozen Rufu, you must stay focused. This is what Shakyamuni is saying. Now, he's going to make a statement, and you're going to go, where have I heard that before? And I'll point it out, don't worry. But expect nothing. That's so important. Nor should a bodhisattva consort with monks, nuns, laymen, and laywomen who seek the Shravaka vehicle. In other words, you may meet other Buddhists who call themselves Buddhists, but they're not seeking Myoho-Renge-Kyo. They're not believing or applying themselves in the Lotus Sutra practice. They believe, they are focused on lower teachings. Don't waste your time. Teach them the Dharma if they're willing to listen. Otherwise, they won't hear you. They have to come to you. This is so important. They must make the effort. Otherwise, you're wasting your precious Buddhahood. Nor should he greet them. It's pretty severe. The bodhisattva should avoid their company in chambers, on roads, or while in lecture halls, and not remain with them. Don't even keep company with them. If they come, teach them the Dharma according to their capacities, but expect nothing. This is a detachment that's very difficult for us because we want friends. Want, desire, crave, cling. We want to make friendships. That's the only kind of friend or relationship we want to make in Buddhism is the Sangha. People practicing enlightenment for ourselves and all sentient beings. Not these other agendas that ultimately fail. We cannot allow that. It corrupts. I know it may sound severe to some of you, but the logic of it is brilliant. It's clear. And it's very nurturing. Yeah, we don't take a lot of time to nurture ourselves. This is the love that Buddha is talking about and Buscaglia is trying to imagine. Moreover, Manjushri, the Bodhisattva Mahasattva should expound the teaching without any thought of desire for or wish to see the body of the opposite sex. There it is again. Wham! That's the toughest relationship to have to liberate ourselves from. It's so corrupting. It's not bad. Don't misunderstand. But it is so overwhelming of our samsaric drive that it quickly becomes an obstacle to our enlightenment, our practice of enlightenment, which is a moment-to-moment-to-moment-to-moment effort. If a bodhisattva enters someone else's home, he should not talk to young girls, maidens, and widows. He's talking to men, but same applies to the ladies. A bodhisattva should not approach the five kinds of impotent men, nor be intimate with them. What's he talking about there, right? Barring heterosexual practices, don't now turn your gaze to homosexual practices. You're just replacing one profound attachment, clinging, craving, with the same clinging, craving, just a different form. You're not running away that easily, right? The desire, the craving, the attachment, still there. He should not enter someone else's home alone. That's helpful. And if for any reason he should enter it alone, a bodhisattva should do nothing but single-mindedly contemplate the Buddha. Did you hear it? That's Nichiren, isn't it? Only a couple thousand years prior, thousands of years prior to Nichiren. Where do you think Nichiren picked up on it? Single-mindedly contemplate the Buddha, Buddha-ness. If you're put into a situation of great attachment, desire, craving, clinging, namo myoho rengeki, namo myoho rengeki, namo myoho rengeki. How do I move through this? How do I not be influenced by this? Namo myoho rengeki, namo myoho rengeki. Yeah? If he should teach the Dharma to women, or to you ladies teaching it to men, so obviously it can happen, he should not show his teeth when smiling nor reveal his chest. In other words, be conscious of your human sexuality, because it will immediately corrupt the proceedings. You know it. You may even desire to do it. That's how strong this samsaric craving is. And that's what Buddha's pointing out here. Because it's one thing to be stumbled by obstacles, but when the obstacle is self-created, and it's self-created in opposition to the highest mission you have, that kind of corruption is not just corruption, it's corrosive. It will damage your practice. But understand, that doesn't get rid of love. It transforms it into something far more profound. But can you just do that based on samsaric knowledge? So Shakyamuni is being quite strict with what we have to grapple with our own practice before we can make the commitment to persevere, preserve, read, recite, copy, and promulgate this Lotus Sutra. We have to be intimately aware, moment to moment, of what it is we're doing, what the goal is. A bodhisattva should take no pleasure in keeping young disciples, sravaka, or shramaneras, or young boys, nor should he take pleasure in having the same teacher as them. He should always take pleasure in meditation and in a quiet place practice to control his mind. Boys and girls, O Manjushri, this is what is known as the first sphere of relationships. Maybe the most difficult part of our mapo, our age of constant interaction. Constant. Right? Look at the relationships we have with our cell phones, our smartphones. We've abstracted our sexual, sensual, friendual relationships. They're constantly in our minds. So, yeah. This is why I say you absolutely cannot allow yourself to chant four things. Just stop yourself cold. Chant to manifest Buddha. That is single-mindedly what we should do when we face, especially our altar, our butsudan, our Nichiren inscribed, our digital copy of a Nichiren inscribed mandala. Nobody else's mandala. We don't want their, they insert their own realities in there. That's a soiled relationship. That's corrupt. We follow Nichiren. We follow the Lotus Sutra practice. Plain, clear, straight ahead. Furthermore, the Bodhisattva Mahasattvas perceive the emptiness of all dharmas in their true aspect. All things are unerring, unmoving, non-returning, irreversible, and like empty space which lacks substance. There it is. It's the materialist thing that we're fighting. We understand that beyond material is energy. That's what we're connecting with. That is what is universal. That's what we all are connected in through of. That is where connected love exists. Not in a bouquet of flowers or a box of chocolates. Or flesh. They are beyond all language. They are not produced, nor do they emerge, nor do they arise. Wow. They do not have any name or mark, and in reality, they have no substance. Energy. Once formation occurs, even before form, before the arising of something, there is no discrimination. There is no thingness. Once formation happens, everything becomes colored, conditional, has tendencies. That's the beginning of our materialist attachment, right? Samsara. They are immeasurable, limitless, without obstacles or obstructions. They exist only through dependent origination, the nidana, arising through error. In other words, things aren't mistakes, but our perception of things are mistakes because we mistake them for real, solid possessions. Suffering. That is why I teach the permanent joy, love, of perceiving the aspects of all existence in this way. This is what is known as the second sphere of relationships of a Bodhisattva Mahasattva. Relationships now being with the material universe itself. Samsara as a thing. At that time, the Bhagavat, wanting to elaborate upon the meaning of this, further spoke in these verses. Shall we save the verses for the next video? I think so. This is a lot to take in, isn't it? Now, it's possible for some of you right now, having heard this, to think, yeah. But that's not, you know, that's not what we do now. That's not, I mean, that's old talk, you know. The world is different now. Or Sifu Sylvain, he doesn't, he's talking a lot about this, but I don't think he means this or whatever. You're going to try to push this out. Because it's freaking hard. But you have to understand, this is Shakyamuni shooting a salvo across the bow of these bodhisattvas who've promised something they may not yet be equipped to realize the effort they're signing up to. We'll see where he goes with this. But for you and I here, bodhisattvas of the earth, which we will read about, in this place called Mapo, this time and space, you have to know the nature of the obstacles you're living in if you're going to be effective at repelling them. Namo Myōren Gekyo. We are the ones capable of doing this. We are the ones who can do this with ease. Ease in our practice. We consciously inject our life, which is our practice, with Buddha-ness to make these transitions not only easier, but part of being making these transitions easier is that we observe, we witness when these corruptions appear. Right? How many times have you told or heard in life, outside of Buddhism, that to know your enemy is essential in being able to protect yourself from your enemy, right? It's when you're unaware that you find yourself too late, influenced, corrupted. And then you have to work so hard, even if it's maybe impossible, to extricate yourself from those corruptions. So don't put yourself in that position. Don't put yourself in that position. What did Buscaglia say? The toughest thing in Buddhism to be is a bodhisattva mahasattva. To be you. To be Buddha in your enlightenment. The most difficult thing to do is what other people want you to be. Isn't that the seductive call of cravings and clingings and desires? So don't let them put you in that position. How can you keep them from putting you in that position if you're unaware? So what did Shakyamuni say? Single-mindedly, right? Contemplate Buddha. Namo Myōren Gekyo. It's pretty clear. Thank you for listening. We will wait with bated breath for the next video. I hope this found you in good health and secure. As always, be kind to yourself. Take care of your health. Your support is, it's everything for this resource, right? All of it, the website, the bookstores, all of it. And all the free stuff, the podcast, these videos, and info on threefoldlotus.com. Like and subscribe. Please, it takes a few seconds and it helps us grow, reach more people, propagate. It's a bodhisattva act. Really. The simplest one. And if you can purchase an ebook or print books, certainly a mandala, use Patreon, PayPal, support these resources. And use them. Use them for yourself. Use them by sharing them. Download, print them for your bodhisattva practice. That's what we're here for. That's what I'm here for. And if right now all you're doing is following along and educating yourself, brilliant. Keep doing that. Namo Myoho-renge-kyo. Thank you once again. Take care of yourself. And I'll see you in the next one, all right? Bye for now.